Coming up on this week's book show, Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award-winning author Louise Erdrich's new book is a ghost story, a tale of passion, of a complex marriage, and of a woman's relentless errors. The Sentence asks what we owe to the living, the dead, to the reader, and to the book. Louise Erdrich on this week's book show. Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award-winning author Louise Erdrich's new book is a ghost story, a tale of passion, of a complex marriage, and of a woman's relentless errors. The Sentence asks what we owe to the living, the dead, to the reader, and yes, to the book. A small independent bookstore in Minneapolis is haunted from November 2019 to November 2020, by the store's most annoying customer. Flora dies on All Souls Day, but she simply will not leave the store. Tuki, who has landed a job selling books after years of incarceration that she survived by reading, must solve the mystery of this haunting while at the same time trying to understand all that occurs in Minneapolis during a year of grief, astonishment, isolation, and furious reckoning. Again, the new novel is The Sentence, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Louise Erdrich to this week's book show. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight.
Thank you for asking me.
I assume the ghost story came first.
You would assume correctly, because who doesn't want to work on a ghost story?
What was the lure for you about a ghost story?
I can't say there was a lure. It was just that there was something, as I say, everyone has a ghost story inside of them, and I guess this was mine.
But this book takes place at such a specific period of time, as I mentioned in the introduction, from November 2019 to November 2020. So it wasn't as if you knew that you were going to be writing in a contemporary sense. It was that you started with the idea of that ghost story. And I'm curious as to what originally that story would have been had we not lived through the hellish year that we lived through.
I'm curious too. I had tried to write this book. I started in, now that I look back, 2014. I made attempts every year or so to get somewhere with this story, but I would always start it where it started, on All Souls Day. So at last, it seemed to me that no other book was in my mind. I had written The Night Watchman, to my surprise, during 2017, 2018. So it was finished, and I still had this ghost story, which not by now had begun to haunt me. And so I decided, whatever happens, 2019, this is the year. I'm doing it, and nothing will stand in my way. What had been standing in my way always before was this premise of the book, which was the book would have to deal with whatever came down, whatever happened, whatever came down, the book would have to deal with it because it's set in real time in a bookstore. So I would have to write that into the book. There was always some point at which my heart kind of sank, like, I don't know how to do this. I'm not a journalist. I can't write this. And then I would put it aside. So this time I decided I would not do it. Would not put it aside. I would figure out some way of doing it.
Because you wanted to explore over that 12-month period of time of how your characters would experience the real world, oh, by the way, while this ghost is haunting the bookstore.
Yes, exactly.
I would say, generally, in 2019, that no one knew what was coming or that it was going to be what had happened, and certainly in our world, not just with the pandemic, but with other factors as well. So when you account for that, and as you're writing it, and you do have to say, as you said, you're not a journalist, but there is that aspect of, okay, this is how they're going to deal with these particular issues. Is that exciting for you, or is that something that you have to think about to ponder, as we all do, as to, oh, by the way, what's really happening to us right now?
That was part of what shows up in the book. I mean, this sense of fog and confusion and misinformation and what we take out of it, and you know, all of the everything in the beginning of something big like this is not a story that anyone can report upon with any certainty. I mean, we had all kinds of reports coming out soon after this book starts. We start hearing about some sort of illness that's making people sick. And, you know, China, I mean, it was the way we began to slowly, now we look at it and we see, yes, this happened, this happened, this happened. But I really had to look back to some of this because I wrote it, I took some notes, but I wrote it afterward. There was so much out there that we didn't know. It was rumor. How is it transmitted now that it's hitting us? And, right. You know, all of the things that suddenly started happening. And I think it would be wrong to not remember all of this, not remember how unprepared we were, how unexpected it was that we didn't have a 95-cent mask for people on the front lines who died of this for lack of a face covering. I mean, the things that happened, we can't forget them. A lot of people want to forget it, and I do too, but we shouldn't, right?
I found that to be a fascinating aspect of not, obviously not wanting to forget it either, but there are things that you are reminded of in the book of what we lived through just a few short months ago. And it is right. In and of itself haunting of what we went through.
Right. And that's what I started to understand as I wrote the book. And I continued, I thought at every turn of event that I might just put this down. I couldn't handle it. But everything seemed to fit into this metaphor. The virus itself is invisible, lethal or not lethal. I mean, what is it? And in a sense, as we walk about our daily lives, even today, we are still haunted by this virus. It's like an active haunting presence that we cannot see. It's invisible. We have to protect ourselves. It's always around us now.
Louise Erdrich is our guest. The name of the new novel is The Sentence. It is published by Harper. Tell us about Tukey and how she came to you. You write in the book, 5 days after Flora died, she was still coming to the bookstore. I'm still not strictly rational. How could I be? I sell books. Tells us a little bit about Tukey, but her backstory has much more depth to it than that. She was incarcerated for almost a decade. And this is a woman who has lived quite a life to the point where she finds herself in the comfort, and I think that's a safe word, the comfort of this independent bookstore.
Yes. She says this is a life she would never have expected to lead. And it's a secure life. It's a life with love. She's surrounded by people that she knows and understands. And she's surrounded by books that saved her while she was incarcerated. But she's not strictly rational. which is actually a description of me, I've often thought, why am I doing this with the bookstore? Why? And then the answer will come in the form of some book or some person who's immersed in a book and excited about it, or some literary, you know, conversation with anyone who walks in. It's not a business propositions that will ever work on a financial level. It's something that people do as a life choice, right? So booksellers are booksellers. And that's something that I've come to understand and respect about other booksellers ever since I've started this store. I wanted to write about how Tookie is, what this gives to her, and maybe what it takes from her to be a bookseller.
That idea of what it takes from her, what do you think it does take from you?
Well, you know, I'm curious, having just said that, how I'm going to answer it, because it seems to me that it gives so much,
right?
So much, but also it takes a real load of attention. It's like an elaborate garden would take someone's attention, right? You can't stop tending a bookstore. Something is always happening, as you see, as the year goes along. You never know whether it's going to collapse. The ground is very shaky. Actually, the store's floor is very shaky in our store. Everything's shaky. So it takes a level of attention. But most of all, it takes attention to finding the people you can work with. And that's been something that's taken a long time. It takes a long time to build a culture of people who are pretty much open with one another, and who have... people have to have affection for one another in a bookstore. It's a small space. One person can really throw it off. So it has to be, it's a very careful balance. And for me, it takes a lot of attention to how people are getting along, what they need, what's not quite working, you know. So from an owner of a bookstore, it takes a level of attention from everybody in it. It takes sometimes a minute level of tension. I mean, I have people who work in the store whose focus has to be so total, you know, in receiving books and in doing returns, that kind of thing. Their attention has to be so total that they really can't work with anyone else around them, you know. So we're tiny and we have to split up our hours, lengthen our hours, and sort of work. There's so many workarounds that we do every day in order to keep the bookstore functioning. Am I making sense?
You are making just sense. Like, la, la, la. No, and if there is a burden, it seems that also part of it, and not to put words in your mouth, but it seems that the burden is that it becomes such a centerpiece of the community and so important that even as you write in this book, as the store is closed and COVID is locking down, there is still an intense need for the books. And there is such an intense need by individual customers to get their fill. And the booksellers are working with them. And that is not a burden, but it's certainly a responsibility.
The bookstore, just to say it, has given me an infinite amount more than it has taken from me. I really am grateful for having the bookstore. But it does take this. It does mean that there is a responsibility. You're absolutely right. And I think everyone who works there understands that there's a responsibility, because it's not a purely transactional. It's not a transaction that is just about money. It's about transmitting something beyond the book. It's about connecting a consciousness contained within two cardboard covers with a human consciousness contained in a round bone. You know, these consciousnesses, you need to, you know, you're connecting these two consciousnesses all of the time. And there's a huge pleasure in it. That's the pleasure I think we all get. In fact, I think I've sometimes hounded people who come in saying they're looking for a book. And then I start going, this is for you. Oh, you'd like this one. And I think I kind of can't stop myself because I get very excited by finding the right book for the right person.
Louise is a character in this novel. She is the owner of Birch Bark Bookstore. And was it harder for you than you thought to write about yourself?
I was part of a few different characters for a while. And now I began to dislike myself, honestly. I began to say, it's really hard to write about yourself if you're not writing from the first person, you know, write like a memoir. It's really hard because it's stepping back and seeing yourself from the outside. And some of it's quite disappointing. But if within this, there's also a kind of subplot of one of the book that the ghost is associated with also seems to have, she's died from reading a book, right? And she's marked the page upon which the book seems to have killed her. Tucky tries to read the book and thinks there is a line in that book that will kill a person. And she tells that to Louise. And Louise kind of says under her breath, I wish I could write a sentence like that. And so that actually was more a writer. Not, was it me? I don't know. But it was like a writer is always looking for writing the killer sentence. I mean, in this case, maybe it was literally the killer sentence, but that's what a writer is always doing, is going to sentence and thinking, this is the sentence. No, this one. You're working on sentences. That's why the title spoke to me so persistently that I had to use it.
Because that meaning varies throughout the novel of what
it does.
That is, and even to the incarceration of Tookie, that it is her sentence.
Because of her error, her precious error, which is from a line from a Clarice Lispector story.
As you always do, you touch on so many interesting aspects, and one of them is about the ghost herself, Flora, who was a devoted reader and a book collector and someone who was always in the store. And the store is, the specialty of the store is native books. And it brings up a word early on in the novel of a wannabe. And the idea of, I used to want to be an Indian. And this idea of what Flora wants and why she is there and what this ghost is searching for from the native people who are in the store is a fascinating aspect of the novel.
When I started this, this was just something I noticed. And of course, it's something that's become more, people are more aware of it now, this sense that you can take on the persona of a minority person, right? And maybe it attracts you and maybe you feel like you begin to own that. But that's more and more common with Native American people. And in this country, there's just a lot of people who may have had some childhood idea that they're Native, or they may have developed it over time, or they may have just decided at some point that that's their identity. And I think it's quite common in academia right now. In fact, there's a large, persistently difficult issue with pretendians, people who maybe almost on a level where they believe they have an identity, but they begin to publish and take and get grants and take over positions on this basis. People don't know yet how to ascertain whether the person who's applying for a position is Native or not, right? So this became a much larger issue while I was writing the book, but I was aware of it. I just didn't know what a big issue it actually was.
It also comes to mean a lot and to really get you thinking, because one of the things that happens as this novel unfolds is right in your city is the killing of George Floyd. And the characters in your novel who are outraged by that, of course, but are also questioning the policing of Indigenous people and the history of the policing of Indigenous people and the look and the parallels of that that becomes very deep within the narrative as well. My question is, was that something that dawned on you as it was happening that you intentionally wanted to explore?
No, I'd always been interested in this. It turned out it was strange. Each one of the people in the family became a focus for this book. So as not being a journalist, I really was not going to be able to come to terms with these events, make them into a story outside of the lives of my people here. So that's what I did.
But you certainly bring us to and allow us to understand of what your characters and those people were thinking and the parallels that they were drawing.
Right. And I think this was happening with a lot of people coming down and understanding what happened on one side or the next. You know, it threw everything up in the air, and the reckoning is ongoing.
There's another aspect to the novel, too, that is so important, and that is the nature, which I think is so interesting because Tookie is often walking home and is relating to the cold or the heat, to the owls, to other wildlife, which is something that you obviously think of, but maybe not perhaps in a city like in Minnesota, but that natural space even within the confines of the city is very important, isn't it?
It is important. And Minneapolis has still got some green space because we have an extraordinary park system. I'm really proud of the park system. It's always voted like the best in the United States. It was established by someone who believed that cities should be, number one, built around parks, and that every citizen should have access to a park within 1 mile. So there's a lot of, some of it has been eroded, and some, you know, the park board is independent of the city council, which is very important. And I hope to God it stays that way. You know, developers are always eyeing at that park level. And I've seen scraps of it get sold off by, the city council still can have, there's several political groups that can override the park board. Okay. So even though it's independent, it still has to answer. So every so often a little scrap gets siphoned off or, you know, ripped off of this very green or tree laden or, you know, this incredible resource gift. I don't know what you want to call it. It's really, really incredible. It extends through the city. The river, the Mississippi River, extends through the city. A series of lakes extend through the city, and now greenways as well are taking the place of old railroad tracks. So Minneapolis does have this gift, but it's always in peril. So as she says, you never know, you know, is this going to stay? And, you know, it's one of the things that one of the many things I value about the city.
When it comes to the character of Tookie, I'm fascinated by the obviously the issues that the flaws, if you will, of the character, and yet how thoughtful and how even when she is rash, that there is a thoughtfulness and an empathy and an understanding that guides her in the end.
Yeah, and I think at the beginning she's so unconsidered and just so impulsive, and I mean, she basically steals a body to make her girlfriend happy. I mean, that sounds terrible, but you have to read it.
Right.
Anyway, she makes this terrible mistake, and you know, things go from bad to worse for her, and she doesn't have a lot of, she doesn't reflect a lot, but she has 10 years of reading and thinking by the time we really meet up with her again. And she has 10 years of anger. I think that's important to realize too, that you can't be in the situation she's been in without coming to a sense of anger and understanding injustice on a very deep level, right? So she has that. But perhaps being a worker in a bookstore, being a bookseller, is maybe the only job she has prepared herself for. Books are very important in prisons, and so our bookstore is part of, we become part of a women's prison book collective, because people read deeply and read a lot in prisons, and we certainly have a lot of people in prison.
And the importance that the dictionary has for her as well, as a result.
Yeah. That's dictionary. Right. And it was the first line of the book, "In prison I received a dictionary." Mm. And maybe that came out of the many times as a writer that I've been asked to become part of a list, or even a book once, of books that you would take to a desert island. And I always say I'd take a dictionary. So there, I gave it to Tookie.
Well, and not only that, but at the end, you have your totally biased list of Tookie's favorite books, which is really wonderful. It is biased,
oh,
but it's terrific.
It's totally biased.
It's a great,
I'm so glad,
list and a lot of fun, and I have many circles, so I thank you
good.
For that. The name of the new novel is The Sentence, Louise Erdrich's new novel. It is published by Harper. What a delight to speak to you. I thank you so much for being with us and for sharing
too.
With us.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really been a pleasure.
Again, Louise Erdrich's new novel is The Sentence. It is published by Harper. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.